Hello, and welcome to Stories from India, a podcast where we talk about myths, legends, and folktales from India. I am your host, Narad Muni, and I'm a mythological character myself. I have the gift of eternal life and knowledge of the past, the present, and the future. By profession, I'm a traveling musician and a storyteller. So the way I'm doing my job is by podcast. In this episode, we are doing a folktale from the Deccan Plateau. The Deccan Plateau is vast, so you could associate the story with the states of Maharashtra, Karnataka, Telangana, Andhra Pradesh, and Tamil Nadu. The story begins with a milkmaid in ancient India. Let's call her Gavalan. She lived on the outskirts of her village. Every day, she would milk her cows, walk into the village with milk cans, and sell her milk. If you think this was an easy job, you'd be wrong. Most of the people who could afford to buy milk already owned cows of their own. Gavalan's clientele exclusively consisted of families that wanted different types of milk but did not own different types of cows. The pickings were therefore slim, and the competition was fierce. That's why Gavalan had the idea of taking her infant daughter along on this particular day. Cute babies attract attention and conversation, and those could lead to milk sales. To enhance the cuteness factor, Gavalan also dressed her baby, whose name was Amba, in a cute little bunny outfit. It wasn't a very long distance to the market in the village, but the milk cans were heavy, and she was carrying her baby at the same time. She sat down to rest for a bit and let the milk cans and her baby daughter down on the ground. That was a mistake. And if Gavalan had known what was to follow, maybe she would have dressed her daughter differently. What did follow was that a giant eagle swooped down out of nowhere. It grabbed the little baby and zoomed off. It happened so quickly that Gavalan had no time to react. She stared open-mouthed into the distance, looking at the giant eagle flying away. But this story is not about Gavalan. It's about the baby girl. You may ask, why did I even bother naming the milkmaid if she only appeared in the story for like 3 or 4 minutes? Well, listen on and find out. The giant eagle descended into his home tree. It's amazing that the eagle did not drop Amba or even hurt her while clutching her in his sharp talons. He must have been very talented. That bad joke aside, Mr. Eagle unlocked his nest doors. Yes, the nest that he shared with Mrs. Eagle had multiple doors, made of iron and wood. It was practically a fortress. Punching in his secret code into each of the 7 keypads for the 7 doors, he finally reached the inner chamber.
"Honey, look what I got. We can have rabbit for dinner," he said.
Mrs. Eagle was already waiting for him, but she did not look pleased.
"I saw it happen. I know what you did. That's not a rabbit, you fool. It's a human baby."
"Oh, my goodness," exclaimed Mr. Eagle.
He suddenly realized that what his wife said was true.
"But how did you know? This happened miles and miles away."
"Hello," she said. "I'm an eagle, and I'm actually eagle-eyed." Unlike the other participant in this conversation. And she glared pointedly at her husband. When he still didn't react, she added,
Did you even see me glaring at you? You really need to go to the oculist for stronger glasses. Or better yet, how about you sit at home and I'll do the hunting? But Mr. Eagle was not willing to listen. He insisted on being the one to return the baby to her milkmaid mom. But a few days later, he admitted that he could not find anyone, and that they had no choice except to bring up the baby on their own. Mrs. Eagle said that she felt sickened by this.
"You can't get sick," replied Mr. Eagle. "That would be illegal."
"I don't like it," objected Mrs. Eagle, ignoring the dad joke. "Human beings are responsible for deforestation and climate change. They tear down our homes, pollute the atmosphere, and they dump chemicals in our rivers and lakes. I don't want to bring up the cause of our own destruction."
"But look at her. She's so little and so cute in her adorable little bunny costume," appealed Mr. Eagle.
The very practical Mrs. Eagle pointed out that while the baby was little now, she would grow dangerous.
"But then she'll be on our side," pointed out her husband.
"Please," he added. Finally, Mrs. Eagle gave in. And not long after, she was glad she did. Umba was adorable. And Mom and Dad Eagle were great parents. The nest already provided adequate security when they were out. But they took care to set a fire going to keep her warm. If you thought that was dangerous, you don't have to worry. They left not one, but two babysitters in charge. A dog and a cat. Often, they would return from their trips with rich dresses and jewelry. They were getting these off of similarly aged princesses in and around the area, because Mr. and Mrs. Eagle wanted nothing but the best for Umba. Several years passed, and one day, Mr. and Mrs. Eagle came to an important decision. Umba had everything, but she was missing one essential item that every princess had, and that was a diamond ring. Mr. Eagle proposed flying over to Africa and getting a diamond fit for the princess that their daughter was actually not. Mrs. Eagle was having none of that. She did not want to get a diamond that might fund a conflict. The story was set before the Kimberley certification process, about a couple of thousand years before. So the Eagles went to Australia instead. They did stock up their nest with provisions to last the whole year that it would take them to make the round trip. Umba, by now, was a fully grown adult woman who did not need babysitters. And yet, the cat and dog were still around. Maybe it was cabin fever, but one day the cat grew so irritable, he went and ate too much from the pantry, greatly diminishing their provisions. When Umba discovered this, she punished the cat, with the dog sniggering in the background. It was probably the dog's reaction that annoyed the cat to the extent that it did. Seeking revenge on both Umba and the dog, the cat stormed out of the room and towards the fire.
"Don't worry, her bark is much worse than her bite," the dog told Umba.
But then, the cat put out the fire. Seeing the shocked, stunned silence from Umba and the dog, the cat asked, triumphantly, "What's the matter? Cat got your tongue?" The cat did regret it, but it was too late. They were low on provisions, and they had no means to cook any food without fire. The only way out was for Amba to do what her parents had strictly warned her against. And that was to step out of the nest. Amba unlocked each of the 7 doors and stepped out for the first time in her life. She saw smoke rising in the distance and headed in that direction. When she got there, she politely asked the old lady who lived there to give her some fire, please.
"Sure, sure," said the old lady,
even though she had no intention of giving the girl any fire. She was a Rakshasi, or a demoness, who just wanted to stall for time until her son returned. He could knock this girl out easily, something that she could no longer do at her age. To stall for time, the Rakshasi asked Amba to grind corn, make bread, fetch water, and sweep the floors. Frustrated by the growing list of chores, Amba finally threatened to leave and to give the Rakshasi a 1-star review. The old demoness had no choice then but to give her the fire. She did advise Amba to scatter some corn all over the path on her way back to her home. She said this would make it easy for Amba to find her hut again. The gullible Amba followed instructions, and when the Rakshasi's son returned, he had no trouble finding Amba's home in the trees. I guess the birds in this forest were very different from those in the Hansel and Gretel story. The birds in that European story had quickly eaten up the bread on a similar trail. The security system at the eagle's nest was very dependable. The Rakshasi's son could not force his way in. Having 7 doors had paid off. It had delayed the eagle family every time they ventured out or returned home. But all that effort had been worth it. Not that it changed the outcome at all, because the next day, Amba was accidentally poked by a piece of the demon's fingernail that was stuck in the outermost door. And that fingernail was so toxic that Amba passed away on the spot. Honestly, I think this is a logical flaw in the story. Amba had been in the demon's home just the day before, and as part of cleaning and cooking, she must have been exposed to way more of the Rakshas than she was this morning. But anyway, let's ignore this and move on. Amba's eagle parents arrived home just a short while after she collapsed. Seeing her lying like that, they were convinced that she had passed away. They went off to mourn somewhere, without even feeding the dog and the cat. But then, another party happened on the scene. It was a king. He was curious why there were dog and cat noises coming from the top of a tree. Investigating, he found Amba lifeless on the nest floor. Observing something poking her hand, he pulled out the fragment of fingernail, and Amba woke up instantly.
"You must be a princess," said the king. "I know, because my sister wears exactly the kind of outfit you are wearing. In fact, she owned a dress exactly like the one you are wearing now. Except she lost it. She claimed an eagle stole it. Crazy, right?"
The eagles had explained to Amba just exactly where and when and how they had got her clothes and jewelry. So Amba chose not to answer the king's question. Anyway, the two got to talking and eventually became friends, which later transformed into something more.
Within a month, they were married. Everyone in the kingdom was very happy with the marriage. Well, except the king's first wife. That's right, the king was already a married man. That had not stopped him from wooing Amba. He got to make the laws of the land, so he could do whatever he wanted. The king's first wife, let's call her Rani, was unhappy, but did not express it to Amba. In fact, she pretended to be enthusiastic. Amba, who had a bit of an imposter syndrome about being royal, was eager to have Rani show her the ropes, as it were. Of Amba's many maids, there was one called Saheli who could clearly see through Rani. Saheli frequently warned Amba about Rani, but Amba chose to ignore the old maid. One day, Rani casually remarked to Amba that her jewels looked so lovely, and could she please try them on? Amba was happy to lend them, of course. When Rani put them on, she also suggested that they go to the well and look in the reflection in the water, so that Rani could see how she looked. Amba thought that this was odd, but was too polite to refuse or even just to point out that the mirror in her wardrobe was a much more sensible thing to check. When the two of them made it to the well, there was no one else around, except Saheli. Saheli went along and again tried to warn Amba, but Amba brushed her off yet again. Well, as you and Saheli and everyone else must have imagined, Rani pushed Amba into the deep well when the two leaned over. Amba, who had grown up in a nest high up in a tree, had not learned swimming. She drowned and was no more. That's not the end of the story, however. How can it be, without reconciliation and retribution? The king suspected that Rani and Saheli had a hand in Amba's disappearance. But he dared not act against Rani without evidence, given that she was related to his kingdom's rich and very powerful royal neighbors. Saheli was someone he could act against, so he threw her in jail. But he did not do the obvious thing, which would have been to ask Saheli for an explanation. Saheli was the only eyewitness to the whole thing. The king went searching for Amba often. He wasn't having much luck. But one day, as he was passing by the well, he saw something amazing. A single sunflower growing from deep within the well. Its appearance somehow reminded him of Amba. He could not tell why. So the king spent hours every day with the flower, talking to it. Obviously, it was a one-way conversation. The plants in this story do not talk. Rani discovered where the king was spending all his time. So she had her servants pluck the flower, burn its ashes, and bury them in the forest. Her servants did exactly that. But right in the spot that the remains of the sunflower were buried in, there arose a wonderful and huge mango tree. Over time, there was a single blossom, and later, a single mango that grew on the tree. It was huge, but somehow stayed on the tree. No one dared to pluck the mango either. They automatically assumed that this mango was reserved for the king. Most of the botanists were curious about the odd behavior of this mango tree. They had missed out on studying the sunflower that grew so unusually out of a well. But now, they had the opportunity to study this tree. They drew no conclusions out of it, but published several papers. I mean, scientific papers. I don't mean that they chopped down the tree to make paper. Now, one thing totally coincidental was that this mango tree was located exactly on the path that Gavalan took in traveling back and forth between the village and her home. One day, Gavalan stopped to rest under the mango tree. After a long day of selling milk, she was tired. As she rested, she heard a plop. She looked around, and to her shock, the single mango from the tree had broken off from its branch and had gently landed in her milk can. Since Gavalan was aware of how everyone was reserving the mango for the king, she decided to quickly exit the scene. If she tried to defend herself by telling them that the mango had landed in her milk can of its own accord, no one would have believed her. She rushed home and bolted the door. Dreaming of all the mango lassi she could make for her family, Gavalan told her husband and her children to go look at the surprise she had for them in her can. The children did, and had different reactions. One of them asked her mommy if the girl in the milk can was a robot. Another asked if the girl was Thumbelina. Surprised by these questions, Gavalan took a look herself. The milk can did not have a mango in it. There was a little girl there instead. She wasn't a baby. She was a full-grown adult, just miniaturized. She could already talk and everything. Gavalan thought it best to keep the girl there. Well, first of all, even if she wanted to reunite the girl with her loved ones, she did not know whom to contact. The girl didn't seem very talkative, other than divulging that her name was Amba. Gavalan could not contemplate asking people if they'd lost a 6-inch girl. Amba seemed unhappy in general, but she did not seem any unhappier with the idea of staying in Gavalan's home. And Gavalan was okay to use her as a proxy for her own lost baby. Her own infant daughter had also been called Amba. Under Gavalan's care, Amba grew, but in size only. She was already a mature adult who refused to speak. One day, after Amba was a normal human size, she went outside and was coincidentally seen by the king. The king was shocked to see his wife alive and well. He followed her to Gavalan's home. Politely knocking on the door, he explained to Gavalan that he was here for his wife, Amba. Seeing this strange, richly dressed man make his claim, Gavalan flatly refused. She wasn't about to let any random stranger just take her daughter away from her now, was she? She had learned her lesson after the incident with the eagle. The king asserted that he would take her by force if he had to. "Ha! You and what army?" asked Gavalan. The king realized that this was true, and that he could not snatch away Amba by himself. He went back to the palace. He then did something that he should have done in the first place. He talked to Saheli. He gave her a chance to explain things from her point of view. Saheli was convinced that no one could have survived the fall into the well, but was nonetheless intrigued by the king mentioning that he had seen Amba or her doppelganger in the village. Saheli readily agreed to go find out who that girl was. She did not hold a grudge against the king. Even though he had imprisoned her in a dark and dirty cellar for such a long time, without even bothering to hear her version of the story, Saheli walked into the village, thinking up a strategy for dealing with this. She decided that she needed to be tactful and subtle. So she started by setting up a home in the village. The king was bankrolling this. It was totally fine to spend all that money. This home might serve as her second home after she retired. The very next day, when Gavardhan came by to sell milk, Saheli offered to buy all of her milk cans, for a good price too. Gavardhan was thrilled. In that state, and especially as Saheli was new to the village, Gavardhan was more than happy to show her around. The two met for tea and shared meals and generally became good pals. All this while, the king was getting impatient, but he let Saheli continue with her plan. One day, during tea at Gavardhan's place, the milkmaid told Saheli her secret. And that's when Amba appeared on the scene. Saheli was shocked when she saw Amba for the first time, because, well, it was not the first time. This had to be the very same Amba. She was even wearing the same clothes. Saheli asked her outright, "Aren't you the girl who was married to the king?" Amba did not deny it. "But I'm not going back to him. The same thing might happen again. I was betrayed by Rani. I had no idea that she was up to no good. I just wish I had some kind of warning." Saheli rolled her eyes at that, recalling the dozens of times she had warned Amba about Rani. The old maid made a convenient excuse and hurried straight back to the palace. Meanwhile, Gavardhan was telling Amba how shocked she was that the adopted daughter of her poor milkmaid self was really a queen. Amba corrected her and said that if that's what she thought, she was in for a bigger shock. This queen before her was really the birth daughter of her poor milkmaid self. She was the child who had been snatched away from her by an eagle long ago. "How do you know?" asked Gavardhan. "Surely, you're too young to remember all that." But it was the eagles who had told her. "But there are many milkmaids in this area. How are you sure that it is me?" "Because," said Amba, "it would be very much unlike a folktale if my birth mother were someone else. Besides, search your heart. You know it's true." About that time, the king arrived on the scene. He begged to take back Amba, but it was only after learning that he had already put Rani in jail that Amba consented to go back to him. That's how the story ended, more or less. Amba and the king were happy. Saheli was happy to be free again. She continued to be Amba's companion. Gavardhan, now the mother-in-law of the king, lived a life of luxury. Rani was in prison, but she deserved to be there. In fact, the only losers from all this were Mr. and Mrs. Eagle. They lived the rest of their lives under the mistaken assumption that they had been responsible for Amba's death. They lived a life of misery, grief, and shame, regretting every day that they left their darling daughter home alone. And I guess the dog lost out as well. Once everyone had left, the dog just could not figure out how to get down from the eagle's nest on his own. The cat was fine though. She simply hopped off. And like most cats, she landed gently on her feet on the forest floor and ambled off. Later, she described her landing as a perfect one. That's all I have for this week. A few notes on the show. This folktale is known in many parts of the Deccan Plateau. But the Deccan Plateau is a rather large one. Unless you have a reservoir of inexhaustible knowledge like I do, you probably would not know the exact area this folktale originated from. Now, there are elements of this story that we have seen in some others, including the whole person reincarnated as a tree after their passing. But there are also things that occur in other stories outside of India that have similarities. For example, Amba's trip to the Rakshasi's home to fetch fire is somewhat similar to the Russian story about Vasilisa fetching fire from Baba Yaga's hut. As is by now expected on the show, the names of the characters represent the roles they play. Amba's name in the original folktale was Suryabai, but I changed it to Amba because that is the Marathi word for mango. I had a tough time there. I could have called her Garud, which is the Marathi word for eagle, or maybe Haddu, which is the Kannada word. But I settled on Amba because that is a bona fide name. Remember the princess in the Mahabharata? We had done a whole episode on her. Episode 91. Check out the link in the show notes if you want to look that one up. Gavalan was an easier choice. The word Gavalan literally means milkmaid in Marathi. Saheli is the Hindi word for friend or companion, and Rani means queen. In the next episode, we'll meet Nala and Damayanti. We'll see a swan play matchmaker, and we'll encounter some good snakes and some bad snakes. We'll also learn that if at first you don't succeed at gambling, and you really want to try and try again, maybe it's a good idea to learn the rules of the game first. If you have comments or suggestions, or if there are particular stories that you would like to hear, please do let me know by leaving a comment or a review on the site sfipodcast.com or tweet at sfipodcast. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get notified automatically of new episodes. A big thank you to each and every one of you for your continued support and your feedback. The music is from purpleplanet.com. That's purple-planet.com. I'll see you next time.